You are listening to Voices from the Grid. Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode. I'm your host for this evening, the Blue Ranger, Brian Massey, and I'm joined by...
Sasha Kaplan, the one and only, the fabulous Red Ranger.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. So I think this is the first time that you and I have ever just done a one-on-one.
This is also like this is the first episode of the season that is just sort of the two different, you know, a different host. So Mike gets to, you know, take a nap now. And yeah. So what's it like being in the hot seat, Brian?
You know what? I could play the whole like, oh God, it's scary up here. What am I doing? But like, I'm used to actually kind of doing this. So it doesn't feel too bad. And you know, like, I feel like I know you enough at this point that I shouldn't be scared of anything unless you are hiding some deep dark secret. You're not from another dimension, are you?
We already dealt with that. We're not going back there again. But you know, you probably should be afraid of me. Everyone should be a little afraid of me.
So okay, take note. Everybody listening, take note. Be afraid of Sasha.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
So today we've got these two random episodes. These are the first episodes that are just by themselves, right, in the roster?
Yeah. Yeah, at least in season three, because what is it? We've had three episodes so far, which was basically setting up a really, really bad spinoff of Kamen Rider, Black RX, also known as Masked Rider, which we already talked about when we recorded our fake series premiere.
Now we have our real season premiere, and now we're here.
Yeah, yeah. So all the ninja stuff's been sorted out, and we've met Ninja Or and all kinds of stuff. And so yeah, at this point, we're just kind of back to like, hey, this is what it's like to watch an episode, you know, like after school. And it's like, hey, there's just one story instead of like, oh God, I have to watch what happens next. And I believe, let's see, I have the notes here. So we're going to be starting with Brush of Destiny, which is the 8th episode of season 3. It originally aired September 18th, 1995. And I do have a brief synopsis here from Ranger Wiki, which if you have any questions whatsoever about Power Rangers or Super Sentai, check out Ranger Wiki. It's your one-stop shop for any kind of factoid that you would need.
Although bear in mind, sometimes the Ranger Wiki is incorrect.
I mean, to err is human.
True, so, but you know, just keep, bear on the mind of caution that sometimes the things on the Ranger Wiki will need to be, they are not always 100% accurate.
And if you know, you can probably fix that too, because I think it's open like Wikipedia. Yeah, you're so smart, you go fix it. So the basic synopsis here, I'm not going to do what Mike does and just go over the whole episode.
We've moved on from that.
Yeah. We've gotten better. What Kimberly has fears about. Whilst, there's a word I don't see very often in print anymore. Whilst Kimberly has fears about moving to Paris, Zed and Rita create the artist mold to drain the Ranger powers. And the episode literally starts with this giant sign, almost like someone's holding it like in frame, being cute. Hey, okay, once we start, pull back. And it says Junior Police Patrol Art Benefit. And from there, we find out that, yeah, Kim's mom has found a new lover.
Who is French lover. And an artist.
Yes.
Which, like, how stereotypical can you get? But...
Like the you could only get more stereotypical if he was also a baker.
Yeah, or he had that really, like, stereotypical French accent, which he really doesn't. But then again, he only has, like, two lines in the entire episode, so, yeah.
Which is funny because we'll get to it, but like in the dream sequence, his accent is very stereotypical, no? And like he even says like croissant, and I'm like, really? Like, okay. Croissant. Yeah. And so the whole gist of this is that you find out that, so I believe it's Tommy and Aisha walk up on her and they're like, hey, what's up? You're kind of in, you know, and she's kind of, like, not, she's kind of zoning out. She's got that thousand yard stare. And she's like, yeah, I just found out that, you know, my mom's found this guy, but I'm moving to Paris.
Well, hold on. Before that happens, though, right after, Kim's not like, she's a kind of dealing with it, like, because what does this mean for ranger duties? Which is, I think, like, a good way to sort of set up what happens later. This is sort of, like, really ridiculous foreshadowing before we get to the whole gymnastics tournament thing.
That is true. Although, I did have a question for you as well. Because, in my opinion, there's two ways that you could take this. The first is you could look at this from the surface value and say, Kimberly's like freaking out about moving to Paris. Isn't she like the girliest girl in the world? Shouldn't she just be like, oh my God. But also you could take that if you like looked at it for more than a second, you could be like, wow, hold on. Wow. That demonstrates a lot of growth for her character because like she's genuinely concerned about her position as a ranger. So what are your thoughts on the way that she reacted to this? And also from season one to now, like, would you say that there's been some pretty significant character growth for her at this point? What do you think?
So considering the episodes that I have to do with Mike later this season, I will say yes. Kim has had a lot of growth, in particular as it relates to her relationship with other characters.
Yes.
So becoming less superficial and but the thing here though, is that it's not the fact that she's moving to, it's not the fact of Paris, because we know she likes Paris. We know she's a girly girl. We know she likes shopping. So if mom said, hey, we're taking off for 2 weeks for a shopping spree in Paris, Kimberly would have been all over that, like a Jewish mother at a doctor's convention.
This is a woman that went to the 18th century. And when asked about the future, she says, the shopping malls are fantastic. You will love them.
Yeah. So if this was like a 2 week shopping spree, she would have been perfectly fine with it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the prospect of moving to Paris, to a country whose language she doesn't speak. She'd have to adjust to a new school system, a new culture, and no friends, and then pile on ranger duties, which granted the ranger duties are sort of secondary considering, you know, they can teleport.
That is true.
But she can, now
that you mentioned it, she can literally show up and be like, hey, what's up? I have fresh baked, you know, bread for everybody. Hey, here we go. Like,
right. So
something like that.
The thing is like, this is never really addressed. Like, it would have been like, we get, not to talk about later seasons, but we do later on have characters who are sort of taken from different walks of life and different places to all become Power Rangers, right? But in all of those seasons, like Overdrive and Samurai, they all sort of end up in the same headquarters. Which, like, it would be interesting to actually think about what it would mean to have, like, three core rangers, right, that are, say, like, from America, and then have two other Power Rangers who are from, like, New Zealand. See what I did there?
I see what you did there. And then the six rangers from Japan, obviously. But, like,
right, there you go. Like, that would be
like, and their command center is literally, like, a VPN chat room, like, online. Like, you know, why do you need a command center?
That's how you,
like,
do Power Rangers in a pandemic. But realistically speaking, like, you know, if there's teleportation technology that's available, like, it's, like, the Rangers really don't utilize it very much.
You bring up a really, really good point.
Right, like, they teleport to the command center. They teleport, they do the really annoying back to action call, which is just irritating. Right, and then they get teleported to random places, like when they need to help a person, you know, fight off their non-existent backdoor pilot.
Hey, we need to go to Vasquez Rocks now. Like, okay,
right,
cool.
We need to go to whatever random planet, right? That's when teleportation technology is used. But realistically speaking, why don't they just teleport and destroy Rita's palace?
Yeah, and you know what's funny is enough people have asked that question that actually became a plot point in a Boom comic, and they addressed that, but I'm guessing,
realistically speaking, Rita's probably not stupid enough to just have a portal, there's probably some, like, magical shenanigans protecting the thing, but then how can Zordon spy on Rita? Like, there's a lot of plot holes here, people.
Yeah.
But to get back
I was just gonna say, like, I would imagine if Rita's smart, her fortress is basically the same as like Dr. Wily's. And it's like, yeah, you have to go through like four different stages to get through here or something, but.
Probably. Anyway, yeah. So we know that Kimberly has this really weird dream and there's a bizarre looking monster, and Rita is like, just Rita has no personal, has some personal space issues because she just like invaded Kimberly's mind and stole the monster right out of her dream.
Yeah. Which is like,
are you that out of ideas that you're now stealing children's nightmares?
Yeah, that is creepy.
Although it wouldn't be the like, first time.
No, it's not. I wonder if like at this point, because it's what 95, it's like it's too early for Backstreet Boys, but it's a little too late for like New Kids on the Block. I could just imagine her like accidentally getting like a dream of like, oh, there's this, I don't know. Anyways.
Think about Power Rangers in terms of like the long-term effects. Like you are on a weekly basis, you are fighting monsters and putting your, you know, life in danger. You get turned into random things, right? You get turned evil, you get kidnapped. Like the effect that has on psyche, I'm surprised more Power Rangers don't have random fake monster nightmares.
Yeah, I'm surprised that has not, yeah. And God, there has to be after 30 seasons. I mean, we're coming up on 30 seasons. There has to be like a PTSD group on Facebook for like past Power Rangers. It's like, I survived a monster attack too.
Although the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers sort of had the easiest job, if you think about it. These, a lot of like, they faced some tough battles, don't get me wrong. But by and large, they're the only season that didn't actually defeat the bad guys.
Ben and I recorded yesterday, and you could argue that no, the bad guys beat them.
Because Rita and Zed make it out of this whole thing better than anybody else.
Oh yeah.
And when they're ultimately pushed out at the end of the season, it doesn't happen by the Power Rangers; it happens by other forces. We won't get to that.
That's like three seasons away from now.
On the other hand, the Turbo Rangers also technically failed.
That is true.
Because
they had to turn into in-space strangers.
Right. So, but that's part of like the Zordon era is weird with villains because there's this weird hierarchy that we'll find out about in a few seasons.
This is not the kind of conversation we're going to have when we get to like Time Force and stuff. It's like, oh man, like that had an effect on like two seasons later or something. And it's like, eh. But yeah, the Zordon era is, anyways, getting back. Yeah. Before that dream happens, by the way, Kim, like, and this is just a little thing I wrote. Kim talks to Aisha on the phone asking, how can I just leave? I'm a Power Ranger. And I really hope that phone is not bugged.
Look, this isn't the Soviet Union. The KGB is not listening to your phone.
Send a unit now. We found
her. On the other hand, it does beg the question of, like, where are, like, federal agencies? Like, again, I'm trying to make Power Rangers realistic. I don't know why, but think about it. Like, there is a inter-alien force, right, that is constantly trying to stop the bad guys, and the government is totally doing nothing about this.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess maybe Zordon is in communications with the government because, you know, Nassada and everything that happens later, but maybe Zordon is one like, yes, I am an interdimensional being. I am helping the Power Rangers deal with this threat. And after 3 years, they're like, how much longer is this going to take?
Yeah. Can we call in S.H.I.E.L.D. already? Like, you know, we might even need S.W.O.R.D. at this point. Oh, good Lord.
As long as it's not the current S.W.O.R.D.
Right. Basically, Kim has that nightmare. And it's kind of a really nicely shot scene too. It's kind of cool because, like, you know, she turns around and she's trying to leave and she can't, and the Pink Ranger's waving bye-bye to her, and she wakes up and she's like, oh God. And she doesn't get any sleep. Aisha had agreed, hey, let's meet up in the morning before school at a park and like, let's talk about this. And, you know, Kim, her whole thing about not talking to her mom about like how she's feeling is that she's just like, I don't want to ruin anything, you know, she's really happy right now, which I get it, but I feel like as you get,
what's up? It's dumb though, because this whole thing could be resolved, because she's not infringing on her mother's happiness in any way. She's happy that her mom's happy and marrying this guy. And she, it seems like there's a great relationship there. And so yeah, she could just like talk to her mom and say, "Mom, I love you. I'm so happy for you, but I'm at school. Like, I'm about to be a senior." Like it doesn't, yeah, right? Like, this whole thing could be resolved with one freaking conversation.
And I would also argue as well, and this is less a Power Ranger thing and just a, you know, human talking to another human thing, is that this is all something that is seemingly just put on Kim. Like, hey, guess what? We're moving to France. We're doing all this stuff. I've made this giant life decision for you without even like considering what the implications of that could be for you. All right, cool. We're leaving in 2 weeks or something. And it's like, Kim at that point, I feel, has every right to be like, hold on, whoa. You did not talk to me about this at all. Like,
and it's not even like she sprung it on her, like when she was home or anything, like you would if this was like a CW show. This is like,
right.
This isn't a freaking art thing.
Yeah.
Which like, and it's like, maybe this is a conversation y'all should have had in private.
Yeah. This is definitely something that like y'all are driving, like, driving down the highway. It's like, hey mom, can we talk? We're not gonna be where we need to be for like an hour. We need to talk about some stuff. It's like, sure, what's up? And like, there you go. I can still kind of see her viewpoint though of like, I really don't wanna, sorry, excuse me. That was my alarm going off. Apologies. Okay, so yeah, this is definitely the kind of thing that you would talk about in the car, where it's like, hey, I've got a lot of stuff on my mind. What do you feel about this? Let me see. I lost my notes. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think there's just, we can sort of circle back to it when you find it, but it's sort of just like this weird dynamic that sort of puts a wrench into the Ranger dynamic, which is fine. You got to shake up the formula a little bit. And it does sort of ask the question that we sort of, that was started like in our fake backdoor pilot of Kim sort of being by herself a lot this season.
Yeah.
Where she's like on the outside. And this is just sort of helping to establish that, like, how do four Rangers fight? It's the same way that like when Trini and Zach and Jason were no longer there, there was a lot of these like three episodes, but then like the other Rangers would show up and it like, as like they're in their morph states, they're like, okay, there's footage that's limited. They're not there anymore. Like, you notice, yeah, those kinds of things as an adult more than you would as a kid, but you still notice it.
Yeah. And season two definitely felt like the black sheep of the, I wouldn't even say trilogy of seasons, but like, yeah, the of the three, it's like, yeah, it definitely felt the weirdest because of that. But here, like, you still have the actress. So, and I honestly, at this point, I don't know exactly the reason why. I feel like maybe Amy Jo was trying to do different stuff as an actress. And so she was like, hey guys, I can be in the episode, but give me some time to go do some auditions or whatever for this, that, the other. I don't know. I feel like that had to have been like the reason, because obviously they replaced her with Kat later. We'll get to that. But yeah, like as this goes on, like, yeah, you see less and less of Kim and it's like, what's going on here? And they honestly, I think that they do a pretty good job of like writing in the reasons for why that happens. But that's for another episode, I feel. By this point, okay, so Fencer's already presented the dream machine and Kim's already talked with her friends, and all of a sudden the Tengas show up. It's time for a fight.
Yep. And I'm going to say this every time the Tengas show up, but their theme music is so awesome.
I do love me some Tengas bye bye. Do, 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 do. Hey, I love that.
Yeah, so Kimberly gets like kidnapped or captured, and then she loses her communicator, which was just like a random plot point to sort of keep her away from everyone that I thought was just not that great. But
and it's not even that, like, if this was a two-parter, that'd be one thing because then there'd be enough time to do that, but it's like she loses it for 5 minutes.
Right. And then that sort of, that seems to be like the excuse to call Ninjor, because Ninjor is just like, they just call him randomly, even though like, they don't really need Ninjor's help. They could have just done this by themselves.
Yeah. Not in this episode. Yeah. No. At this point, I think, what is it? Finster extracts the monster from Kim's brain, which is like, whew, that could be, I feel like in a more mature version could like really do some like crazy stuff with that. It's like, hey, there's a monster in my brain and it looks just like me. Oh God. I don't know. But they extract the French stereotype out and he's like, oh yes, let's do these. And the monster, let's go ahead and talk about the monster real fast, because what's weird, okay, we've obviously gone over how much of a stereotype he is, but also his weak points, like, they change from like one scene to another.
Yep.
Which is weird, because I think, what is it, like, Zordon tells Kim when she shows up, which, by the way, she's like, hey, that's the monster from my dreams. I'm like, that's probably the closest we're going to get to seeing what Kim looks like drunk, because she's already really tired, but she's like, but Zordon's like, you have to aim for the palate. The palate's where the power is.
Yeah, and how does Zordon know that?
I don't know.
There's a very simple explanation.
Oh, no.
That is my answer to everything now. That is my catchphrase now. There's a very simple explanation.
Sasha, your black sweater's starting to turn green. What's going on?
Don't even go there.
So yeah, like, she gets down there and we find out that the only reason why any of the Rangers can't hit them, but like Kim is because, oh, it's her monster. Okay, cool. But then like either Tommy or Ninjor says, aim for this. No, I think it's Rocky actually is like, aim for the stomach. It's his weak point. I'm like, and if I'm Kim at that point, I'm like, but Zordon just said to aim for the path. What? How do you know this? Okay, cool.
It's a very simple explanation.
And then, like, she hits it, and it works. And it's like, did Zordon lie to me, or was this just bad writing? Okay.
We're going to check it to probably most likely inconsistent writing, but it's funny because this season, I think the multi-parters, by and large, with some exceptions, one or two exceptions, are actually a lot better than, like, the filler episodes.
Yeah.
And it just like, it feels like the filler episodes are just sort of this episode feels like it was just sort of tossed in.
Hey, we need to have an episode for this date, but
either yeah. That or like they were writing this episode and they're like, oh, we need an action scene. Whoopsies. And so they just sort of tacked it on.
Which is cool because
previously.
Yeah. And I think what's cool about the like multi-parters is that at that point, they're basically mini movies. Which I kind of like. I like the idea of having many movies. Granted.
Especially when you have like three or four part episodes.
Yeah, that's easily like a hour and a half to 2 hour movie.
Right. So ultimately the monster is defeated and Aisha has the perfect solution. And we meet Aisha's parents and they invite Kim to stay with them for the school year. And Kim Ak finally has, or for the rest of the school year. And Kim finally talks to her mom. And her mom was like really understanding, and which like begs the question, like, why didn't you like ask if your daughter was okay moving to Paris? Because like she's not 12. Like she's nearly an adult. Like, come on.
Like, and also like it feels like you are putting at that point, you are kind of putting an imposition on your daughter, because like if you're going to move back to the States, that's one thing. But like, she's an adult and she wants to do stuff with her life. And she's lived in California.
Well, she's still
her
whole a teenager, life. But
yeah, it's
near
like
near adult.
That's, do you know how much money it's going to cost for her to move back overseas? Like that's kind of like making it feel like, oh yeah, you're going to be in France the rest of your life. It's like, ew, okay. Unless they got the money for that, whatever, cool, fine. But
well, apparently he's like a big named French artist, so
oh, there you go. can I please have some money, stepfather? artist stepdad.
I mean, we don't, do we know what her mom, well, don't, I'm sure money's, you know, with the economy in Angel Grove, though, she'll be fine.
That'll be fine. They're That's constantly fine. Rebuilding buildings. There's jobs everywhere. Now, I did not know that you could do that, by the way. Like when Aisha says like, hey, you know, you can just live here. I'm like, and like, they're like, yeah, it won't be an imposition. I'm like, are you sure that's not going to be? Okay, cool. I mean, I just didn't know that you could do that.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, I didn't know that like you could just offer, hey, you can just live here. Like, especially, if, I don't know. It just, it was not even an option I had considered, but then it's like, okay, I guess that works.
It makes sense because Kimberly's not old enough to live by herself yet. There needs to be some adult supervision. And let's be real, considering how unrealistically perfect these teenagers are, like, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Kimberly will probably clean their entire house as a thank you and cook them breakfast and then, like I don't know, do something else ridiculous because this is how Power Rangers works.
Yeah. I had a painting commissioned for you by my new stepdad. and then like, let's go ahead real fast and just get this out of the way. Bulk and Skull, this episode, their whole thing is trying to find the painting
that was sold and not stolen. Yeah
and they fall asleep on the job, and there's really not much to say about Bulk and Skull this episode except for
There is a couple of things though, because I do have one note. Let me find it again. So Bulk and Skull are, so this is part of what we've established, that Bulk and Skull are cops in training. And two things are important here. One, Lieutenant Stone is a jerk.
Yes.
And two, Bulk and Skull are not going to be the greatest cops in the world, but they're trying. Like, they're genuinely trying. Like, they show genuine concern for the fact that a painting is missing. And even though the circumstances, they don't, like, throughout the season, they don't really think about, they don't think things through. As, you know, Ben and I will talk about when we get to a few of the Rocky-centered episodes. Or the one Rocky-centered episode, I should say. And so we see them trying. But I don't know what the heck kind of police academy they went to, but junior police training, but clearly how to run a proper investigation was not one of the courses taught.
Yeah.
And Lieutenant Stone is a jerk. I just want to state that again, because it needs to be stated twice.
It would seem as though the police academy that they went to was not the one that Carl Winslow went to, but the one that Michael Winslow went to instead.
Not even. It's just there, but Lieutenant Stone from the beginning didn't think much of them and didn't really give them a chance. He was just like, oh, here's two bumbling idiots that want a uniform to look cool for girls in, and so he puts them through the ringer. And instead of afterwards realizing that, like, you know, oh, I can really make these two into detectives, he just gives them jobs and sort of expects them to fail without any assistance. Like, these are children in high school, you moron. These are not full-fledged police officers. Like, what are you doing? But then
they
again,
still got homework stuff to do. I just can't imagine. Like, I know that the ROTC is a thing, but like, I can't imagine going to school dressed as a cop. It's like, oh Lord. like, I don't know. But this episode was, that was a thing. You know, and it sets up that, hey, Kim might not be around come season 4. I think I've asked all the questions, because I have a little note here for like questions for Sasha. I think I've asked all of them. And if you're cool, then let's go ahead and move on to Passing the Lantern.
Oh, Passing of the Lantern. We get a random bit of Adam's family history.
Yeah. And I failed to write down the synopsis for this, but I can say that this was episode 9 of season 3, and it did air September 19th, 1995. So if I had to come up with a synopsis, I would say Adam, again, gets a lantern passed down from his family, and Rita and Zed sense that and go, oh, we could turn that into a monster, and hijinks ensue. Basically.
But apparently it had, but don't forget though, part of the thing is that it had to be that specific lantern because it wasn't like any other lantern. This was a magic lantern.
It's a magic lantern. So then, yeah. So what then happens, there's a lot that we could talk about in this episode, but honestly, I don't know. But the whole thing too is they're looking for this one lantern. Rita thinks she finds it. She doesn't. Well, and I feel like,
well, because first of all, they don't actually know what the lantern looked like. But let's go through this episode step by step, right? So the episode starts with Adam coming back from his family reunion with this really beautiful lantern. And apparently it has some inscription, the answer to which he doesn't know because no one told him. And instead of like, I don't know, using a dictionary, you know, to translate it himself, Billy's like, oh, I know a guy. And I'm like, wait, but wasn't the whole thing that the answer was supposed to come to him and he needs to figure this out on his own? No, we're just going to have a random person that Billy knows that we will never see or hear from again explain? Okay, fine. So we go to this man's lantern shop,
which I believe his name was Co.
So he translates the meaning. Oh, also it should be noted that this is one of the few times that I get to do this. Adam comes in to the episode at 1:16,
which is, I think,
unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. Oh no.
I think it's like, I understand they sort of had to like prop up his entrance, so I guess it makes sense. But Adam is sort of like non-existent this season. So this is a little sad that like the one Adam-centered episode that I get to do, he comes in a little later, but fine. So yeah, whoever's name is translates the lantern and it says the lamp may light the path. But you must light the way, something like that.
Right.
So it's a very, and Adam is like, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, think about it for a hot second. And he was like, oh, you need to figure this out for yourself. I'm like, uh-huh. Yeah, this is not rocket science. Like, if Miss Apple, whatever her face is, taught them critical thinking skills like she's supposed to in high school, instead of having them do reports on their hobbies, they would have the necessary skills to figure out this very simple philosophical point.
I mean, you gotta, yeah. And what's funny is, Bulk thinks that he can translate this whole thing too, by the way, and his response to that after seeing the note was just like, don't try and read something unless it is in English, which Bulk and Skull are kind of they're kind of interspliced throughout this whole episode too. They're kind of like there's even a scene when like you find out that Tommy, Rocky, and Aisha are just hanging out at the same place that like Billy and Adam are, which, oh yeah, Kim's not there, funny enough. And they just kind of meet up on the walkway, and Bulk kind of gives them a, you know, head nod, and it's like, what are you doing here? What are you doing, like patrolling? It's like, actually, yeah, we're patrolling. Okay.
So one of the things that I noticed first off is that Squad and Babu are back.
Yeah.
Why?
Especially since Rito's a thing now.
But I guess it's so Rito has someone to work off of, but like Goldar still, like, it's so weird that Squad and Babu are here with Rito, because as is typical, they don't do anything and they're not really necessary for anything. They're just, yeah. It's like the writers are like, oh, we still have these costumes. We should do something with them. What? We'll just put them on screen and underpay the actors that have to be in it.
Yeah, I think you just hit the nail on the head probably.
It's just, it was really dumb. But anyway, so they go to steal Adam's lantern, and they manage to steal it. And like, kudos to Bulk and Skull, because they're like, oh, this is a big deal. We're on the case. And they actually, this is a really great Bulk and Skull moment in this episode, right? Mm-hmm. Because not only do they you know, agree to help the Rangers find their lantern. Not only do they find the lantern, manage to get it, and run away from before Rito and the Tangas figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, that's brilliant. Like, that demonstrates courage and skill, because they easily could have just dropped the lantern and run, but they didn't.
They held on to it, and then they ran.
Yep.
Which, there was also this, like, fourth wall breaking moment as well, when they're screaming after they leave, and it's like, they're just screaming, and it's like, wait, what are we screaming? It's like, evil space aliens in front of us just use their teleporting powers to leave. Oh, okay, cool. And then they start screaming again. I was like, at this point, they're kind of trying to, like, make fun of the script that they've been given, probably, aren't they?
Yeah,
which is fine.
They need to, like, this is a season of kind of like, you know, Balkan Skull's journey is multi-seasonal, and this is just, I think the writers, first of all, I think most of this happened unintentionally. By Balkan Skull have the opportunity to grow, but it's sort of like trying to find the balance between the buffoonery and the real heroes that they are.
Yes.
Okay, but then, like, so they go to the command center to talk about the lost lantern, right? And Zordon is like, Zed wants to take the cool lantern's powers. And I'm like, how the frick do you know that? Like, do you have Rita's palace bugged? Like, do you?
I saw it on their Facebook.
MySpace.
It's Why on am I not in Lord Zed's top 8 anymore?
There you go. So Zed apparently really needs, like, this one specific lantern. But there is also this weird moment where it sort of seems like Balkan Skull lose the lantern, because as they're running away, we don't see the lantern. We sort of see it for a hot second, and then it cuts to Rito, and then it cuts back, and the lantern's gone.
Yeah.
But also, like, this is the second episode where they called on Ninjor for seemingly not really necessary reasons.
Which, I mean, yeah, sure. I'm okay with it, just because I get to hear Ninjor again. And I love doing that voice.
Right. But it feels sort of like Ninjor is fighting their battles for them now.
Which, I mean, at that point, you know, and I am trying to not compare and contrast too much, because I am trying to focus on Power Rangers when I do the show. But at that point, when Ninjor shows up, that is solely based on the Sentai footage that they're using.
So that makes sense. But then again, there's no real in continuity explanation for why they need Ninjor, or when it, like, does Ninjor in the Sentai, does he have, like, a bigger role?
Yes.
Like, does he take, is he sort of the mentor of the season? Or, like, how does that work?
No, he's not the mentor. He's kind of the unofficial sixth member. And he's definitely around a lot more. And he actually interacts an awful lot with the Kaku Rangers. I think I said his name, but if not, his name's Ninja Man in Japan.
Ninja's cooler.
And Ninja Man, I don't know. Ninja Man just kind of has the same tone to me as Pepsi Man. And I kind of love how simple and stupid it is. But yeah, he's around a lot more. And, like, there's even a thing where, like, if I ever do a thing about a Cocker Ranger, like, there's this thing where, like, he's trying really hard to help this sick kid in one episode, and, like, he feels really responsible for it. And so, yeah, he gets to do a lot in Cocker Ranger, but here it's just kind of like, okay, Ninjor is the guy that created, you know, the power coins, and he's also there to help out, but don't disturb him if you don't really need him. That's kind of what his role is in Power Rangers, it seems like, at this point.
See, because my reaction is like, here's this cool, powerful ninja dude who gave them their powers, right? Which, but like, he should, like, I feel like he should be like a mentor, or like a character that, you know, is brought in when the Rangers are having a really hard time with a particular bad guy because they're too strong. Like, that would make sense. And there you have Ninjor, sort of the unofficial seventh option. But
I would even argue, because he was trapped in that like vase for as long as he was. And like,
was he trapped, or did he choose to hide in it though?
I think if I remember correctly, I have to go back and watch, but I think he chose to stay in there in America, but he was trapped in Japan.
But, yeah, because we talked about this in, because, okay, you know what, I'm going to, fourth wall break here, guys. Remember, we record these episodes out of order. So in, when they go to, when they find Ninjor's hideout, it's very clear that he's just sort of hiding inside the lamp or whatever, because he keeps telling them to go away.
No, thank you. Want to talk to him.
So that's sort of why I'm like a little confused by this whole thing. Yeah. But okay, fine. If you're gonna use Sentai footage, you're gonna use Sentai footage. Just like at least come up with a semi-logical explanation for why this.
The biggest problem too, if we're really getting into like, you know, production issues, is that Ninjor is very much there as like the second, almost like a second Zord, if you will, in these fights, and it's really hard to like cut around that. So either you're gonna get really big close-ups on the Ninja Megazord and you're gonna, you know, have to cut a lot of stuff out, or you're just gonna have to have Ninjor in those fight scenes. So I guess at this point it boils down to, yes, they could have done a better job of explaining why Ninjor's there and they're not just, you know, dog whistling and being like, hey, come on down, we need you, buddy. Like, all right. And I think the best way to fix that issue would be like, why doesn't Ninjor just take a room at the command center and just hang out there?
Or and like hang out like, with Alpha? You can explain it that maybe like they need extra help because the combined forces of Rita and Zed have become too strong and they need the extra boost that Ninjor provides. Or even blame it on Rito for reasons that I don't care about. But like there are options.
Give them a rivalry or something, and like have Rito this like every time he shows up, Ninja's like, it was on site, dude. I told you the first time.
Right. So yeah. So they defeat the monster. Adam is sad about his lantern, and then Bulk and Skull show up and they give the lantern back, but then they embellish the story and there's slapstick, which I thought kind of cheapened the whole thing.
And Ernie, of course, warns them multiple times, hey, I just mopped the floor. They're kind of wrestling. They wind up taking a really big bump on the back and like they're kind of out of it. And all of a sudden the cheesy music pops up, like, you know, freeze frame happens, and then we end the episode. Now, in the middle of the fight, though, and we'll wrap this up soon, but like in the middle of the fight, because like Adam straight up tells the guys, don't destroy it because it's a family heirloom, because he doesn't realize that that's not the same lantern. And he goes through this kind of epiphany, and like that's when he realizes what that inscription means to him. It's like, oh, you know, like it might represent what my powers are, but like, everything exists inside of me. You know, I'm the lantern. It's like, okay.
That's we're gonna have to disagree on interpretations here on what that means. It's less about the lantern. It's the fact that the lantern is a tool that can help you light your path, but it's ultimately your decision what you do with that path and where you take it. Yeah. Because it's not going to show you where to go, it's just going to show you what's right in front of you. Boom!
Like, hey, here's,
look at that. I could be a teacher.
There you go.
Take that, Miss Appleby. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, the best part about this episode until the end was Vulcan Skull for me. And as much as I liked, I don't know, I felt like Adam deserved a little bit better in this episode, just because like he doesn't do anything by himself, right? He doesn't figure out he figures out the meaning of the inscriptions in the heat of battle, sure, but like he doesn't say like, oh, I have my dad's uncle's cousin's nephew's former roommate is this lantern guy, right? Billy's the one that brings him in. And then this guy's the one that translates the inscription. Like, it would have been cool if like Adam translated the inscription himself, or like, cause like, if you want to have a lantern shop, fine, maybe Billy suggests, like, why don't you go to the lantern shop and they can maybe help tools to help you translate it. And then Adam ends up meeting with this guy and he helps him translate the lantern. Like, that would have been so much more interesting.
Like, and it could literally be somewhere he's sitting down and, like, you know, in that area, and like, he like grab a book, let's take a look around, let's, you know, and like, it's a thing of growth. It's like he's going on this journey himself instead of, like, you know, just being like, all right, I don't know what to do, where's the manual, hold on, you know.
Right. And so, yeah, I don't know. Adam deserves better.
Adam absolutely deserves better. And I can only hope, because I've only watched so much of Zio in my adult years, that I hope that he does better in Zio. I don't think he's going to, but I hope for better.
He has some moments in Turbo.
Yeah, the first half of Turbo that he's in.
Yeah.
But let me see here. So I believe that's all the questions I had. I did have one question I guess I could go ahead and ask, and then we'll wrap it up. Why are these Zord fights over so dangin' fast?
Why are they so boring?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And also, why are they calling the Ninja Mega Falcon Zord if they're just going to use the Woof and Ape Punch to dispatch the alien?
And why does the Ape Sword not look like an ape?
Yeah.
These are the questions that we will never get answers to. Ever. It's just the reality of, I think the part of it is the reality of looking at these episodes as an adult. Because for me, the nostalgia is gone now, because I'm watching a lot of this for the first time, because I never saw these episodes.
Right.
I've seen a few here and there, but not, like, I've seen the multi-parters, but not the filler episodes. And so I don't have the nostalgia goggles that, like, you and Mike have for this.
Right.
So it's interesting that now we're at a point where you have me and Ben as the adult watchers, largely, or they watched it as a kid, but no nostalgia part. And then we have you and Mike who are, like, in the nostalgia. So,
which is funny, because the nostalgia is starting to wear off just a little bit for me at this point, because the further we get more into the seasons, the more and more I was starting to, like, do other things instead of watch Power Rangers as a kid. So it's interesting, because we are going to hit a point, I want to say around Turbo, where I'm going to be like, and now the nostalgia is off for me, and now it's all new to me.
See, the thing that's funny for me, because at the end of Turbo, for me, nostalgia will sort of, actually, it might even start with Zio. The nostalgia will sort of restart. Because there's seasons that I love and remember watching as a slightly older kid, like 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. So right. We will get there, and it will be quite the adventure.
That's going to be very interesting. That's going to be an interesting, interesting season to talk about when we get to it.
That's when the infighting happens of who takes what episodes.
All right, Ben, who's going to host this Lightspeed? I'm hosting all of them. Or what? I'm hosting all of them. Okay, cool.
We already know that's good. We've all sort of resolved ourselves to the fact that Ben is just going to host all of Lightspeed Rescue. But anyway.
Which I'm completely fine with. He's going to be the Red Ranger or the Titanium Ranger. And I'm cool. We will get there when we get there. You have nothing else, then we can start. Go ahead and wrap this up.
Cool.
All right, so Sasha, where can we find you on social media?
You can find my lovely self over on Twitter at Sasha Kaplan, at Geeky Captain, that Geeky Kaplan, that's Kaplan with a K. I have too many things that sound the same, okay? So I mess up names. But it is Geeky Kaplan with a K on Twitter. I got it that time. And that is right. Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. Fight me. You can find me on Tumblr at geekgirl101.tumblr.com. You can see all of my really cool musings about what would happen if Marvel Comics was just a little bit more Jewish. They're a lot of fun. We have now discovered that there is, in fact, an official rabbi in the Marvel Universe, and no one messes with him. So thank you, Rabbi Lowenthal.
That's awesome.
And of course, you can also find me occasionally on Twitter for this show. It's going to be VFTG_PR. And everything else is on going to be on this website, which is, you know, txhthockey.com. And of course, for my podcast, it will be /nerdy-notions. And Brian, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at OneDrunkGeek. You can also find me online on YouTube and at castwavestudios.com. Please feel free to check out our shows. We have a bunch of different shows, but our main two are One Drunk Geek. And of course, as always, Boldly Going Nowhere. You can also find me on Instagram at Draken22. That's DRAKKEN22. And yes, I had that name way before Tommy ever did. So that's where you can find me. And then let's go ahead and wrap this up then.
All right. In which case, thank you all for joining us. Next week, we will have a new team of people for the episode. I believe our schedule says that it will be Brian. I take that back. It'll be me and Ben coming back with some awesome episodes. So tune in next time.
Yeah, fantastic. And I know that the next time that you'll see my face, it's probably going to be me and Mike.
Voice. They'll hear your voice.
They will hear my voice. That's right. So without any further ado, as always, ladies, gentlemen, and otherwise, please, as always, be sure to grab your power coins and your power morphers, and may the power protect you.